President Joe Biden has wasted no time. So far, he signed a slew of executive orders.
30 in 3 days, last count. Some of these take aim at his predecessor's policies.
Others, they target the coronavirus.
I'm Scott Simon.
I'm Lulu Garcia-Navarro, and this is Up First from NPR News.
Undoing Trump's signature policies angers some Republicans, but others applaud Biden's drive.
And Anthony Fauci, the nation's top infectious disease expert, says Biden has to be decisive when it comes to the coronavirus.
I think goals are there to be met and perhaps even surpassed. Go for it. If you surpass it, that's wonderful.
We ask, just how realistic are those goals?
And a year ago, China sealed off the city of Wuhan. The virus is gone, but at what cost?
Stay with us. We've got the news you need to start your weekend.
This message comes from NPR sponsor, the Capital One Quicksilver Card. With Quicksilver, you earn unlimited 1.5% cash back on every purchase everywhere. That's all there is to it. Just unlimited 1.5% cash back on everything you buy. What's in your wallet?
President Biden has spent his first days in office trying to address the many crises facing the United States. He talked about his top priority yesterday.
A lot of America is hurting. The virus is surging. We're 400,000 dead, expected to reach well over 600,000. Families are going hungry. People are at risk of being evicted. Job losses are mounting again. We need to act.
Governing with a divided Senate will make it all the more challenging. Senate Democrats announced last night former President Donald Trump's impeachment trial will begin the week of February 8th.
So let's dive into what's ahead for President Biden with NPR senior political editor and correspondent Domenico Montanaro. Good morning.
Good morning.
All right. What do you make of Biden's strategy coming into office with so many, huge problems to tackle?
Yeah, I mean, he's definitely coming in with a clear sense of urgency. You know, he was clear about that in his inaugural address. He wants to address this multi-pronged, multifaceted problems that are facing the country, including COVID and the economy, climate change and racial justice, domestic division, white supremacy. Not exactly, shall we say, the smallest or simplest things to tackle. Yeah. But he's off to a running start. He's signing lots of executive orders, being bold about how he wants to attack these problems. Of course, he's going to need Congress to really do a lot for these things. Speaking about all of them, he's identifying the problems, laying them out for the public. He's trying to pressure Congress to show how urgent these problems, in his view, are and need to be dealt with sooner rather than later. You know, the impeachment trial, now beginning in 2 weeks, gives them a little breathing room to at least get some of their agenda items in front of Congress and to get some of those key agency heads confirmed.
When you say he's laying out the problems, I mean, describe what he's telling the American people and where we're at, frankly.
Well, you heard a little bit of it in that clip addressing the death toll of the pandemic. You know, the economic impact from it, you know, is also pretty clear. I mean, the virus hit, you know, these new peaks now this winter, and fewer people are going out and spending money. Look at December. That's a time when usually people are spending a lot of money. 140,000 people lost their jobs. That's a pretty worrying sign of this dark winter that Biden has been warning about. The unemployment rate is 6.7%, meaning almost 11 million people don't have jobs. That's down from the 14.7% high last April in those early months of the pandemic. But both measures are nearly twice the pre-pandemic levels last February. And of course, we know that the economy has disparate effects on communities of color, and you know, which has worsened racial economic inequality. And that's, of course, something Biden is planning to lay out proposals on next week.
Among the many differences of the previous administration, the focus on climate change is one. He has really named that as one of the main crises facing the country. How can we understand what he considers to be the issues with climate change as this new administration kicks off?
Well, look at it this way. In 2020, we saw, as of October, 16 climate-driven disasters in the U.S. that cost $1 billion each. That's quadruple the number of storms that of that caliber from 3 decades ago. You know, the argument from Republicans that it costs too much to shift to things like renewable energy and upend industries. The Biden administration's arguing it costs too much not to do anything about it. You know, and when you have all of these other domestic crises, climate change may feel like this esoteric thing. It might not feel as urgent, but you have an administration and a president pretty notably speaking about it in a more urgent way than past administrations, even Democratic ones.
Is it realistic to be that ambitious? I mean, he's talked about a lot of things that he wants to do to sort of focus on that.
Yeah, I mean, there's a question of how much political capital any president has, and especially this president, given the country so divided at this time, because he's not just talking about dealing with climate change as if that wasn't big enough. You know, he needs to get a massive COVID and economic relief bill through, and he put out a massive immigration overhaul bill on his first day in office. And there's always these realities of politics. And if we're talking about getting back to a new normal, this normal may look like some of the old partisan disagreements and gridlock that Biden will have to try to break through to solve most of this.
That's NPR's Domenico Montanaro. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
The Biden administration's number one focus, of course, is the pandemic.
The new president spent his first days in office issuing executive orders aimed at jumpstarting the fight against the coronavirus and touting a 200-page battle plan.
NPR health correspondent Rob Stein joins us. Rob, thanks for being with us.
My pleasure, Scott.
A really different tone from the White House about the pandemic from what we heard just a few days ago in a previous administration. Are there changes of action to go along with the rhetoric?
Well, you know, it certainly represents a dramatic change of tone. As we all know, the Trump administration consistently downplayed the pandemic and essentially punted much of the fight against the virus to the states. That led to a disorganized patchwork response, widely considered to be a big reason why the U.S. became the epicenter of the pandemic. In contrast, the Biden administration is warning in stark terms that COVID-19 is the gravest threat to the nation and promising that the federal government will take a much more aggressive, you know, nationally coordinated approach from everything from testing to vaccines instead of leaving the states to fend for themselves. As an example, instead of ridiculing people who wear masks, Biden issued a mask mandate on federal property and for interstate travel and immediately unleashed federal scientists like Dr. Anthony Fauci instead of sidelining them. Here's Dr. Fauci on All Things Considered last night when he was asked his reaction when told everything at the White House would be based on science.
I said, hallelujah. You know, that's a very liberating feeling where people don't have to be worried about when you're saying something that you're going to get pushback from your own team.
But, you know, Scott, we'll have to see where this translates into meaningful action, you know, especially if Congress doesn't come up with the billions of dollars needed to pay for all of this.
Of course, one of the promises the Biden administration has made is to essentially kickstart the vaccination campaign. What does that look like?
Yeah, you know, there's been a lot of confusion and frustration about the vaccination campaign so far. The federal government has distributed more than 39 million doses of vaccine, but the CDC says only about 19 million doses have actually gotten into people's arms. The new administration is promising to administer at least 100 million doses in the first 100 days and planning a number of steps to try to make that happen, including enlisting FEMA to run as many as 100 mass vaccination sites around the country and invoking the Defense Production Act to make sure there are enough supplies, such as, you know, syringes to extract every last dose from every vial.
Rob, 100 million doses in 100 days, I mean, it is a lot, but is it enough?
Yeah, so, you know, some say it isn't fast enough, you know, that the U.S. should be shooting for double or maybe even triple that to beat back the virus, especially when we've already hit about a million shots a day by now. You know, and while the pandemic looks like it may finally have stopped accelerating in the U.S., tens of thousands of people are still getting infected. Thousands are still dying every day. Infections are still rising in some parts of the country. Hospitals are still overwhelmed in some places. So the country is still in a race with this virus to try to save as many lives as possible. And the virus could easily surge again if the vaccination campaign doesn't finally speed up, if people aren't careful, and if any of those new, more contagious strains take off.
And there are some new worries about the UK strain, right? Could you tell us?
Yeah. The British government just announced that in addition to being more contagious, the UK variant may actually be more deadly too. Now the evidence for that at this point isn't that strong, but it's just another reason why it's important for people not to let down their guard and that the country vaccinate as many people as fast as possible.
NPR health correspondent Rob Stein, thanks so much.
You bet, Scott.
Exactly 1 year ago today, Chinese officials announced that the city of Wuhan was going into a total lockdown. Here's what we heard from From NPR's Beijing correspondent, Emily Feng, just hours before the city was shut down.
Video shot from Wuhan show people lining up anxiously at its train station and airport, trying to catch the last transports out before everything was suspended at 10 a.m. The city is the epicenter of a never-before-seen type of virus-related disorder.
For 76 days, more than 11 million people were mandated not to leave their apartments to prevent the virus from spreading further.
And today, China is still discovering dozens of new coronavirus cases each day, but Wuhan has gone for months without reporting a new case, and life has mostly gone back to normal.
NPR's Emily Feng has spent the last few days in Wuhan and joins us now to talk about the changes the city has seen in the last year. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
What is Wuhan like these days?
It's nearly back to normal. People are out walking in the main shopping areas and parks. I can tell you that traffic is back. But I say nearly back to normal because there are still rules in place. You have to wear a face mask, and people are still wary because there are dozens of new cases being discovered in other parts of China right now. All of this still has a damper effect on the local economy. I spoke to one vendor at a major seafood market in the city who echoed what many small business owners were telling me. He's saying the pandemic is still having a huge impact on business. No large gatherings are allowed, and so restaurants don't have business. That means vendors like me do not have business. And while China's economy did grow this year, that recovery has not been felt by people like him, small businesses. And so when I was there in Wuhan this week, many shops were closed permanently.
That's really interesting that they're still feeling this, even though obviously they have a low caseload. Emily, how is that initial lockdown being remembered there? It was so strict.
People are divided. Some people applaud how strict the measures were. Other people are angry at how harsh they were. What is certain is that many but not all people are still suffering from psychological and physical scars related to the lockdown, whether it's because they have lingering symptoms from COVID or they lost someone. One of those people who's still grieving is a woman who wanted to give only her last name, Ms. Zhong. Her son died early because hospitals were so full they couldn't take him. She's saying officials were meant to serve the people, but they were not transparent. If only they had told us the truth about the virus, we could have taken health precautions and my son might still be alive. There's also been this political legacy of the lockdown because people were arrested after the lockdown was lifted. They had challenged the official narrative of what the state had done. One of the people I talked to in Wuhan this week was a taxi driver, and all he had done was share some pictures online of daily coronavirus case counts that at one point were posted all around Wuhan. Because he shared those online, he was detained for several hours by security agents and questioned. He's saying, police raided my home at 3 a.m. They really scared my wife and son. I didn't think they would care so much about pictures I'd taken a year ago. So, yes, people are celebrating in Wuhan, but there's also this wariness to talk about the lockdown because you could say the wrong thing.
The World Health Organization will be visiting Wuhan this coming week to investigate the origins of the novel coronavirus. What will they be looking for?
They want to understand how the virus leapt to humans and whether the virus began in Wuhan. So they'll visit sites like that seafood market where the first infection cluster happened. But it's not really clear how much they're going to find. That market has been completely cleaned, and the WHO team is going to face political pressure because both the U.S. and China have propagated these conspiracy theories that suggest either the U.S. brought the virus to China, no scientific proof has been given, or, according to the Trump administration that has left office, that China somehow leaked the virus from a military lab.
That's NPR's Emily Feng. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Lulu.
And that's a first for Saturday, January 22nd, 2021. I'm Lulu Garcia Navarro.
And I'm Scott Simon. Up First is back Monday with the news to start your week. You can follow us on social media. We're at Up First on Twitter.
And for more news, interviews, books, and music, you can find us on the radio.
Weekend edition, Saturday and Sunday mornings. Find your NPR station at stations.npr.org.
President Biden campaigned on uniting the country. He now takes office just weeks after a pro-Trump insurrection. The NPR Politics podcast is there every day to break down the transition of power as Biden takes the reins in Washington.